This podcast is brought to you by Pragmatic Solutions, the leading iGaming PAM platform with a modular approach, including many benefits like a fast, secure, and scalable API-based platform integrated with all major third-party products and services. Make sure you head over to Pragmatic Solutions and join our smart thinking.
Hey everyone, I am here with John Bowden from Playstar Casino in New Jersey. John, how are you doing today?
Yeah, good, thank you, Michael. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, my pleasure. And I'm super excited to get into this conversation with you today. But before we do that, if you wouldn't mind just giving us a quick intro of John and also of Playstar.
Yeah, sure thing. I'm CMO of Playstar. We are live in New Jersey. We're an online casino. We have a casino only offering and it will stay that way. And me, myself, I've been in the industry now for, it must be around 14 years. Predominantly in the UK market, actually, before I moved over to Playstar. I was managing some of the soft gaming brands at Entain. So brands of the likes of Gala and Foxy, the umbrella of brands that sits under those as well. So always been focused on bingo, casino, slots, that type of vertical. And then when I departed Entain after many great years there, was considering the next step, and the US market just always massively appealed. And then when something like Playstar came along, and Playstar has a character-led brand, we have a character called the Concierge that we use as a vehicle for advertising. And managing Foxy before and the entirety of that business, it spoke to a lot of things that I'd done before, and especially seeing as I was rejuvenating that brand, it felt like going from, you know, Entain, obviously huge brands, massive teams, and healthy budgets, to moving over to a startup in the US market was quite a shift in what I'd done previously. But I've absolutely loved it and been here coming up to 2 years now, and we've been live in New Jersey for just over a year. August 2022 we launched.
Nice, very good. Yeah, I remember the Foxy Bingo character as well. Such a standout value in the UK market as well. No, I mean, it's really a household character by now, right?
Yeah, huge levels of awareness with that brand. And when I took that brand over, I was working for Alison Diggs at the time, who'd done some amazing stuff there with Gala and the Foxy brands. And she said, look, awareness is always up here. Let's get consideration that way. Very much a household brand. I think they've had to change the branding recently, sort of taking away the Fox a little bit. But yeah, look, I mean, when Playstar came knocking and it was a concierge-led character that was the face of the brand, and it was kind of this digital character, I thought, oh, there's so much that we can do there that we've done and been tried and tested in another market that I can probably bring across. So that was very appealing as well.
Amazing. Very good. Well, John, you're one of the few individuals in the industry that has this unique perspective of having been both on the sort of the US side of things, but also with a long history of European or non-US activity. So for people who might not have experienced the US market, how would you sort of compare and contrast the two marketplaces, US versus non-US, I guess?
They're similar in terms of audience. Obviously, casino, online casino translates the same in UK, EU, US. The products are very similar, although the UK market that I've worked in previously predominantly is a little bit more advanced around kind of the soft gaming, gamification side, that sort of thing. Whereas in the US, that's kind of starting to come through. The other thing is around, regulation in terms of what you can and can't do from a marketing perspective. Obviously, affordability is the big focus in the UK, heavily regulated in terms of, onboarding of players, keeping players on. VIP schemes are kind of becoming not quite a thing of the past, but there's such a watchful eye on them. Whereas in the US, that type of regulation hasn't quite hit yet to the same level, of course. But look, we obviously act responsibly, and we put our own checks in place with that. But with that comes a little bit more freedom in terms of advertising, in terms of channels, that kind of thing, in terms of offer. And the other thing that I'd say is around kind of the spend levels, in the US, especially being so sportsbook heavy as well, and this is what sets us aside a little bit. There's such a huge focus on sportsbook, on celebrity, there's a huge amount of above the line advertising, and then performance spend is obviously seriously heavy. There's a bit of kind of a spray and pray approach in terms of that level of awareness, and brand awareness is a huge thing and obviously a big focus, and you're seeing that translate as well into profitability and also revenue. So yeah, those would be the kind of main differences. But look, the audience is similar in the fact that, you know, they still like the same products that you have and that we offer in the UK and EU markets. A lot of things that drive loyalty translate over very well, you know, from gamification to loyalty schemes, you know, bonusing. I suppose the other big difference that I noticed when coming into the market are kind of the CPAs and the bonuses. I mean, they're absolutely huge and eye-watering, especially when you come to a UK market where it's a lot more diluted in terms of what you'd be willing to give a new player from an onboarding perspective, and also what you'd be willing to pay a CPA to like affiliate networks or some of your traffic partners. But then you look at kind of the ROI and the LTVs, you kind of rub your eyes like, oh my God, yeah, actually you can get an ROI from this. So those would be the main differences for me.
Nice. Yeah, speaking of CPA and LTV and stuff, I remember when the US market opened up for a casino, at least in the beginning, it was like just crazy amounts. Like it felt so inflated, and it was just like a battleground for all the big boys, right? Would you say that level has been maintained ever since, or has the worst craziness been over now, and we're coming back down to more reasonable levels, or how would you describe it?
It's still huge. It's still really, really heavy in terms of that bonus. And there's a huge amount of abuse in the market as well. So sometimes it's hard for you to decipher who is a real casino player versus someone who's coming in just for the welcome offer, because they can act very similarly. You know, there's no, there's a few differentiating factors that we watch and monitor very closely. But yeah, no, it's still heavy. We actually halved our welcome offer from when we went live pretty quickly to kind of reduce that amount of abuse. And it didn't actually have too much of an impact on volume or value. If anything, obviously it helps us from a value perspective. But yeah, they're still really chunky when you compare to other markets. And sometimes feels a little bit of a race to the bottom because, you know, brands looking like they're trying to outdo each other. But actually, we've managed to stay fairly competitive with a $500 reload and 500 free spins on your first three deposits. And that works really well for us from both a conversion perspective and getting those multiple deposits through. But yeah, it's a bonus heavy market, especially for welcome offers. And I just don't see any real way around it, because even trying to sell in your USPs and, you know, bringing out that you have a loyalty scheme, you offer something different, gamification, all the stuff that we do, deliver through the concierge, you know, you still have to capture that attention. You still have to grab the eye of the player, especially when you're on affiliate websites, that kind of thing. And you're going up against bigger brands, more well-known brands, as we do as a challenger brand in Playstar.
Yeah, and that's a great segue, right? I think there are a lot of B2C operators sitting over here on the European side and you know, looking at the US market, you know, drooling almost, because it looks so interesting and exciting and attractive and big TAMs and what have you. But at the same time, very much a scary market, because you're up against all these brick and mortar giants that have a massive database from land-based, you know, super established, and you know, it's just rolling out the online part as part of their existing offering. So, and you guys have come in as an online only offering. You don't have any brick and mortar business. In addition to that, it's also casino only. Whereas, like I said before, like 80% of the news you hear or read from the US is sports betting focused, and it's a massive sports betting market. So looking at it from the outside, is it a little bit of a David and Goliath story that's sort of unfolding here, John? And you know, it must take a lot of courage to step into what feels like lion's den from the outside, at least.
It did a little bit, especially when you look at the resources that others have and the amount that they spend and the partnerships as well that they can lean on. It's, you know, they could leverage the NFL, NBA, getting these big kind of household names that are sports stars to kind of front the brand. Obviously, you know, we can't do that, and it's not relevant being a pure online casino. But what I will say is the value is in casino. People know that, and the strategy is very much, you know, you drive through acquisition through sports, it's lower CPAs, and you can cross-sell into casino products, although there is obviously casino acquisition going on as well in tandem. But yeah, it does feel a little bit like David and Goliath when you consider, you know, we're not a household name. We don't have that bricks and mortar presence in the US. And actually, when you look at some of the brands that we go up against, the majority of them do have that, you know, that presence there. If they don't, you know, you're talking some of the DFS brands, and they're just so well known, so widely spread in terms of brand name. So it is a bit like that. You know, we do combat it though by investing heavily in performance versus the brand side. And that's what we've been doing over the past kind of year and a half is, you know, we came up with this strategy that was all around the market drives awareness and will drive preference. So, you know, we don't have to educate the player. They're already playing elsewhere. Actually, what we can do is offer a much better experience and come in and kind of cut a very expensive line. Whereas, you know, the others will kind of push a lot from the brand sense out, but that's worked for us extremely well. Our ROIs have been great. Really strong acquisition numbers, but now we're in the realms of, okay, we have to now drive some awareness of the brand. We have to drive some consideration and preference, you know, some of the softer metrics so that people don't just see us through affiliation and get to know us by word of mouth, which has worked extremely well. Organic's been great as well. We have had, you know, really strong organic numbers, but we're now starting to kind of dip our toe in the waters of, okay, what does a cost-effective brand lay down look like? You know, we don't have to spend on linear TV. We don't have to have huge amounts of wastage. And actually, we can kind of understand what is working and what's not working. When we're spending on brand, when we're spending on these more kind of quote unquote above the line channels to drive that level of awareness. And are we then getting conversions further down the line? And that's just going to help performance. So, yeah, it's, David and Goliath's a good analogy. But now we're kind of having to meet in the middle. So we're going to have to beef up David just a little bit to go up against the monster. but yeah, no, it's something that's worked extremely well so far.
Nice. Very good. Yeah. So like you're saying, you're going to let the big boys sort of drive the market and sort of the education of the players, and then you come in and pick up all the activation bit after that. But how have you? I mean, you mentioned before the, you know, sort of the casino player is a casino player kind of approach, Europe versus US. But at the same time, if we look around the US, I mean, we see tier one operators launching how to tutorials, like with the games of, you know, how do you play slots? And how, you know, I've heard stories of, you know, people sitting in an airplane with a, you know, whatever, a US resident, and they literally, some of them have, you know, are literally starting from scratch, right? So they have not felt comfortable with or understood the online part at all. Have you seen that with PlayStar as well, or have you had to sort of, you know, take 10 steps back in your mind and go back to, you know, UK 15 years ago kind of thing and start there and also improve the educational piece, or how has your experience been?
Yeah, it is a bit like that, frankly. It is like stepping back into a moment in time. But, you know, we would like to be the brand of preference of both. So, you know, if someone is a newbie, they're just about to try online slots for the first time, you know, that they can come through to PlayStar. The concierge is almost there as a guide to walk you through it and get you around like the casino lingo and get an understanding of you know, how to play games. And we are launching a lot of content around that as well. You know, I think with the US market, I think the stat that I read a while ago was that 50% of all US citizens had visited a land-based casino in the past year. I think this was around 2021. And that's a, you know, phenomenal number. So the education's there. It's just, how does that then translate over into online? How do they have the confidence to play online, you know, and find their way around? And that is where we come in around real simplicity of the product, like trying to make sure that players can find the content that they want to play instantly. You know, they've got the best content on offer, as well as having some really fun, unique gamification experiences. And we do that with our headline promotions. We have a team that's phenomenal at kind of bringing out, especially around seasonal events. So Thanksgiving, we've got an advent calendar live at the moment. When it's the Super Bowl and when football kicks off again in the autumn, we have this super goal kick game where you go into the PlayStar arena and you've got to try and get a field goal, it releases bonuses and all of that sort of stuff. So that helps with onboarding because that's just intuitive. That's not something you have to go and learn. But yeah, we'd like to be the brand of preference for the experienced casino player because we only offer casino. We know casino extremely well. But then on top of that, from a new player perspective, especially someone who is a complete newbie, you know, the uninitiated, actually they can come into PlayStar, they can feel that it's a safe environment, that, you know, they get walked through in terms of what to play. And we're really pushing on that content next year, especially as we're starting to spread our wings a little bit from a brand sense. So actually I think we'll probably be, you know, acquiring some more players like that that are completely new to online.
Nice. I'm thinking, you know, if I turn the dial back 10 years in Europe, I still remember a lot of the market research came out with trust being the number one sort of, you know, driver, if you will. And we spend a lot of time thinking about trust, building the website for trust signals, you know, whatever we could do to build up trust. And now, you know, even sort of like feeling comfortable with online payments and using a credit card online and all, you know, the good old days.
The slot games now, aren't rigged, if you remember those as well.
Yeah.
You know, when everyone starts playing online, it's like, it's got to be a fix. What's going on there? Yeah, exactly. So it's a huge driver for that. Yeah.
The good old days. And I think now, if you look at European market researchers, you know, it's not so much trust coming up, or people are uncomfortable paying online and all these kind of things. It's much more, is the website easy to use? Do they have my favorite games? You know, these kind of things.
Yeah.
But I could imagine that the trust piece is probably still pretty important in the US, I would imagine. Or is that established for the online part, or what would you say?
Yeah, I think it is. I think you're absolutely right. And the thing is that it's probably not spoken about as much as it was, say, in the UK market, as you rightly state, like 10 years ago, that was a huge driver. Funnily enough, talking of past experiences with Foxy, that was one of the things that was like, well, hang on, players that play with us really trust us, and players that don't trust us. And then there was a huge piece around it, like, is it the Fox? Because Fox is a bit wiry, you know, they trusted characters. It was this sort of thing. So, and it was a massive factor for us. It's
Let's
like,
drop the Fox.
Driver.
They don't trust.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, you never trust the Fox. They're crafty, aren't they? Yeah. So that was the whole piece that we did around it. Is okay, how do we get trust out? Now we're doing a lot of trust drivers actually with PlayStar. The reason I think maybe in the US it doesn't come up as obviously, although I do think it's a massive factor there, is the fact that, you know, a lot of the brands do have a land-based presence, or they're so big, you know, like a BetMGM, a DraftKings, a FanDuel, that actually they're household names anyway. So how would you not trust them? It's, you know, whereas in the UK market, obviously, yes, from the sportsbook perspective, there is high street bookies, of course, but for the kind of more casino-led brands, there's not necessarily that kind of land-based presence, and so with that, there is obviously a little bit of, I suppose, mistrust initially in terms of you getting your payments fast, you know, when you're spending, actually, is this real? It's very different to like a land-based slot where you play or you go with a live dealer. So, yeah, we're actually pushing on that now. I think it's more important for us than I would say the other brands in the US, as we are a challenger brand, as we are a startup, as we don't have that bricks and mortar presence and, you know, that kind of front of mind advertising, because you can go and play in a PlayStar casino. You can't do that. So, yeah, we're pushing a lot more trust drivers, you know, around our reviews. We've got great app reviews, as well as all of the features that we have, you know, how we're trusted through some of the comparison websites, affiliate stars, all of that sort of stuff. We're starting to put that, especially from an acquisition point of view, on landing pages, and just to say, you know, how many downloads we have and all of that sort of stuff. But yeah, it is absolutely something, especially as more brands, I think, go into the market and casino opens up a little bit more into more states. You're going to have more challenger brands like us coming in, that ultimately license but don't have that kind of land-based presence.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it obviously, at least as it stands today, it requires quite deep pockets to enter the US. There's quite a barrier to entry. Mm-hmm. There's definitely the marketing cost. There, you know, like you mentioned, the inflated CPAs, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Whereas over here in Europe, like you see a massive long tail of smaller casinos, white label casinos. You know, you have, you know, thousands of them. You know, you've never even heard about. You know, I don't know. I don't even know. I think someone was trying to estimate the other day how many there are, but I don't know if they came to any conclusion. Do you think if we look into the crystal ball and sort of think, you know, 2 to 3 years or 5 years into the future, do you think it will ever be possible for that long tail of smaller casinos to enter and be in the US market? Do you think we will see a copy paste of Europe in US over time, or will it be remaining the sort of battle of the giants?
I think so. I think because everything that you read now in the market, in the US specifically, is that I think operators, especially over the past couple of years, have got a lot savvier around their marketing spend, their bonusing. You're seeing profitability be a big buzzword. When I, even as recently as when I joined the business going back 2 years, that wasn't really, it was all around growth, right? And brand awareness and, you know, aggressive growth. And then with everything that went on post COVID and, you know, the economy, that started to change. And yeah, unfortunately for us, the strategy that we had, the winds of change were coming for some of the bigger brands at the same time. And people were focusing on profitability, and then people getting EBITDA profitable, and then, you know, big profit targets over the coming years. So as that's now such a big focus, it is more difficult for a startup, especially like us, to go from a standing start to get into profit as quickly as possible, is a challenge, because others are doing things correctly, and you're seeing that kind of opportunity window maybe dwindle a little bit. But I do think with that, with people doing things better, with people having less wastage, with bonusing being a lot less generous, I would say, and actually bonusing the right players and focusing on that and focusing on optimizing your lay down, all of that sort of stuff, I actually think it makes it better for everyone, because then actually everyone kind of comes in line a little bit. So for sort of the smaller brands to come into the market, enter the market and make it work for them. But there's a lot of talk about it being quite saturated. And it's exactly as you say there, when you look in other markets, the amount of brands that are there, and as well as the kind of the overhead costs and the tax and all of that stuff, is the same in other markets. And as I said at the top, you know, it's a lot more stringent around affordability and responsible gambling, which is coming for sure. And that's why, you know, as I say, from a Playstyle perspective, we are operating in that manner now, and making sure that we're looking after our players. When that kind of hits, I suppose, a little bit more aggressively, I do think that there's enough to go around from a brand perspective, because actually, you know, the UK has been through that. They've gone through that kind of affordability piece. And actually there's been a huge amount of brands in there, huge amount of brands in Sweden, other markets in the EU. And then actually when you look at the market in the US, we think that it's like there's a huge amount of brands in New Jersey offering casino. And there's a big offering there. And, you know, from a customer perspective, they have a lot of choice in the market, but it's still not the same level as some of the other markets. And yeah, I do feel there's opportunity still for new brands to enter the market and make it work. But you're right. I think to start with, you have to have deep pockets. You have to realize that you're going to have to go through a period whereby you're optimizing, you're finding your feet, you're establishing where you are as a brand versus the rest of the market, and trying to get that clear water to offer something different from what you offer to what the market's currently offering. But I don't think by any stretch that actually it's a kind of, you know, closed door to a market there. I do think there's big opportunity still.
Nice. Very good. All right. You touched on it a bit before, but if we have to sort of look at your marketing approach to the market, like, I don't know, John, I'll give you the impossible task. If you had to describe your marketing strategy in one sentence, what would it be?
Marketing strategy in one sentence. That's a very good question. I think it would be performance is king. That is ultimately what we go for from a marketing perspective. Most of our laydown has been performance led up until now. We are now looking more into kind of that brand led approach from certain channels, you know, connected TV, VOD, things that we can do from an audio perspective, some kind of digital out of home, that kind of thing. But by no stretch are we going to be going for kind of, you know, billboards, linear TV and stuff. It's just not right for us for the size of the brand and what we're trying to achieve. But we've been very much a performance led laydown. And it's really helped us from a standing start, for the fact that I've a really lean team, but we've got a fantastic team, people that I've worked with previously in past lives, as well as being able to recruit some people that I've worked with before. So we've kind of built the team from the ground up, and it's been an amazing story in terms of being able to get through some really high caliber people who know what they're doing, some real SMEs in the business. So with that, we've not been wedded to any one channel. So, you know, if something's not working fast, we move quickly around our laydown, pretty much in real time. Our tracking's first class as well. Our acquisition team have done an amazing job of making sure that we kind of understand pretty much to every FTD, you know, where they're coming through, what channel, and the ROI as fast as we can in real time, pretty much. And so with that, that's afforded us to be able to kind of test and learn, but test and learn fast, you know. So very much kind of plan, do, review around our laydown. Very heavy on third-party traffic providers from an affiliate sense, from an app marketing perspective, a lot of app partners as well. And again, that's helped us kind of scale up pretty quickly because we worked with people that we've had previous relationships with and managed to get some really strong levels of traffic, both from a volume and a value perspective through. Next year, there's a bit more brand spend involved, but at the same time, if we can't track it and we don't understand what it's doing from either a post view perspective or how many clicks that we're getting through some of the channels that we're pushing live next year, then ultimately we move fast and make sure that things are working and optimize accordingly. So it's exciting next year because some of the channels that we're going to be activating, I think are going to be kind of new to the market in a way. We're working with SGG. I know you had Troy Paul on here. Those guys are great. And we're going to be looking at a live casino stream as well. So I think that's going to give us some amazing content and be a whole new channel for us. And something that they've seen be working very well in the sports world is moving over now to online casino. And some other channels that we're looking to push live as well that are driving more of the brand piece, but at the same time, we can understand what it's doing in terms of supporting performance and driving through both both volume and value. But performance is still king as well, even next year. We do have to, as I say, kind of open up a little bit to some of the other channels that we haven't been so readily assured to go live with and push live. But it'll be interesting to see what it does.
Nice. Very good. Yeah, we spoke during the prep call. It's almost like, you know, I think a lot of the other brands, you know, follow sort of the traditional marketing funnel, if you will, building awareness, getting them to consider you,
yep.
and then activation follows that and they convert. Whereas you guys have almost sort of approached it in a sort of reverse pyramid manner, starting with at the bottom, what can we activate? What's the performance? Now, let's say, taking one step further up the funnel and opening up for a little bit of brandformance or digital brand or whatever we want to call it. So the reverse pyramid model can work really well. Then that must be the lesson learned, John, from your experience.
Yeah, I think so. We started with performance first, as I say, and that's kind of also helped us drive some awareness in the market. Because, you know, we're up on with most of the major affiliates we're working with. And those guys, you can kind of see the other brands that we're in the mix with. And it kind of then drives, we talk about trust, it drives a level of trust that it's like, oh, okay, so, you know, I'm looking at a landing page and these guys are here with DraftKings and, you know, some of the other bigger brands that gives us that level of association. So, yeah, that bottom-up pyramid, as you put it, I think is a really good way of contextualizing it, gives us afforded us some time to kind of, you know, build from the bottom up. Let's make sure our performance channels are working. Let's make sure we've got a strong ROI, all of that sort of stuff. And then on top of that, we're now sort of opening up a little bit from a brand sense. And we need to do that, frankly. There's only so much we're going to do from utilizing some really strong affiliate networks that we have, pushing through third parties. We do have a strong level, as I say, strong level of organic traffic. But where we really want to kind of put our foot down next year and start to get the brand out there more, we ultimately have to do that. But I do feel that there is a way of doing that that limits your wastage. If you make sure that you can track what it's doing from a performance sense, if you can understand what it's doing post view, all of that sort of stuff, I think is going to massively help. So, mm-hmm. So yeah, that's going to be exciting for us next year.
Yeah. I would love to hear, John, you know, you speak a lot about sort of agile spend management and performance is king, right?
Yeah.
If you don't mind sort of describing sort of your mindset and approach and, you know, working with budgets and agile spend management, obviously without spilling the secret sauce, but how agile can you be?
So as I say, we're not really wedded to any one channel. We have an overall spend, myself and the team, we kind of split up exactly where we think we should be proportioning that spend. And that's based on both volume and value, making sure that we can get the fastest ROI as possible. Now, that approach allows us to move budgets quickly. You know, when we're not wedded to any one channel, we can move it within a day, week, month, whatever. You know, we don't have a specified team that's purely focused on PPC, a specified team purely focused on affiliates, and this is your bucket of budget. And if you're not using it, you need to kind of make it work and optimize. We can spread that across anywhere. I think the key for us was making sure from a tracking sense, we knew exactly what was going on. And as I say, the guys in the acquisition team did an amazing job from the get-go. Before we were going live to kind of ensure that from a tracking sense, it was really first class. We understood where every single FTD, where every single conversion, all the way from the top of the funnel, from click to registration, all the way to multiple deposits. So that twinned with, you know, really strong tracking from a revenue perspective, and giving us kind of live data around return on investment to understand very quickly what's working. And we're just super agile in terms of being able to move things around. So I think that's the secret, really, you know, making sure that we're not wedded to any one channel, that everything's kind of, it's one overall bucket that we can utilize as we see fit. And then on top of that, understanding what's working fast from both the tracking and return on investment perspective. And as such, we then move to optimize. Where we can scale up, we do. Where we need to scale down, we do the same as well. We're constantly optimizing. So it's kind of this living, breathing thing, which is great. I mean, it's a lot of work, a lot of time and hours put in from the guys to make sure that this whole thing works from a performance sense. And we want to apply the same thing to brand, as I say, to make that more of a cost-effective route for us.
Yeah. So in order to, like you mentioned, to do this agile spend management, you do need to invest into the proper data tracking and the analytics and the tools you need to do that. So yeah. from a marketing budget point of view, on an annual basis, would you say you're sort of over indexing on sort of allocating funds for that sort of side, the data, the analytics, the tracking side of things, versus a normal operator or what you've seen in the past?
Do you know what? Probably not. I think the fact that as a new player to the game, we were able to go in pretty greenfield. So we didn't have any legacy tools that we had to stick with. So we work with the Intellytics guys. They are our affiliate platform, and it's fantastic. We get the data back pretty much in real time. So when we looked at the market, we've worked with, you know, various different affiliate platforms. We decided, okay, this is the one for us. This is the one that gives us the closest possible view of real time in terms of what's going on, both from a conversion and revenue perspective. And that's helped us forge really, really strong relationships with our affiliate network. And then on top of that, you know, we actually use Intellytics to track pretty much everything. So that's worked extremely well. I wouldn't say that we have a heavier investment than anyone else, or as a proportion of our laydown or overall budget that we invest more into tracking. I just think what we did is from the get-go, we did it right. And we didn't let any kind of legacy platforms or things that were a bit clunky. Look, don't get me wrong, we've had some workarounds. Of course we have. But at the same time, we've made sure that from the start, we had eyes on everything that was going on, that from a tracking perspective, we found some clever, smart ways that we could kind of understand exactly where every FTD is coming through. And we still have some that come through, you know, a kind of NA null bucket that we kind of have to then kind of reverse engineer it to understand what's going on. As I'm sure everybody who works in performance that's watching this will have the same issues. But at the same time, no, it's not something that we've said, you know what, it's a conscious decision, let's invest more than anyone else as a portion of our spend and make sure we know what's going on. We just set out from the start to say, look, let's do this right from the beginning so that we know what's going on.
Very good. Very good. Also, like we mentioned, not to forget, the US is a massive app market, right? It's download apps. All
huge.
Around. Is it 85-90% of the traffic that comes through apps now, or how is it for you?
Yeah, it is. And you know, the other thing, anything that comes through from a mobile web perspective, because, you know, from a geo point of view, that's obviously so stringent in the US. Actually, we have that baked in. So we push people to the app anyway. So anyone who's going to go through kind of like a mobile web journey, they can still obviously play that way. But it pushes more to the app side. So yeah, we're at about 85%, I think, last time I checked, in favor of app, in terms of both an acquisition sense and also our active base in terms of interacting. Some of that is, you know, self-serving because we kind of push people across to the app. But, you know, whenever you go to Jersey or the US, you know, everything is app first. In fact, the language that's used from an advertising perspective is, you know, Caesar's new app. You know, it's never kind of just pushing out a URL. It's always kind of app first, from what I've observed in terms of the market. And we do the same. You know, we make sure from an ASO perspective, from app partners, from our creative proposition advertising, that we, you know, we're app first in terms of promoting the brand, just because we know that's where the traffic is and that's what everyone's used to. It's clearly what the market interacts with, how they play from a New Jersey perspective, for sure.
Nice. Very good. Marketing is one side. Obviously, you need to have a strong product to market as well. So tell me a little bit more about the product philosophy, if you will, or how you guys look at that. You mentioned you have quite a few USPs or hooks in the market before, John.
Yeah. Yeah. So look, we have a lot of the same content that everyone has, and we all kind of offer that in the market. So I think the biggest differentiator for us is the bits that kind of fit around that. So we have a huge volume of gamification, and that's from a headline promotion perspective all the way through to some of our daily retention games, some of our loyalty level games as well. And on loyalty, we have a loyalty scheme for everyone. So we don't just focus on kind of the high rollers and VIPs and then the non-VIPs. We have 5 different segments across the base. And with that, we can offer something different to every single level. It's called the Playstyle Club. They can track in real time kind of where their level sits, whether they're going to progress to the next level and see what the rewards are there, or whether they're kind of slipping behind and they'll go to a lower level and they kind of have to build up again over the next month. And that's been a great retention driver for us because the players can see in real time, we have like progress bars everywhere. It's very interactive and very engaging to see what's going on. All of this is delivered as well by the concierge. So you kind of feel like you've got this person there leading you all the way through from a loyalty perspective. And then as well as that, we have a Star Rewards program, and that's our loyalty program whereby you build up stamps on a virtual stamp card. And then you can go and redeem those stamps versus against, I think we have 2,000 different providers on there, from kind of IHOP to HelloFresh to Days Out with the Kids to, I think you can buy even holidays and hotels at Expedia. So there's a lot that you can get from that. And it's that for me is such a great, unique thing. And we try to make it really local as well. So we really localize our loyalty scheme. You can get rewards in New Jersey, also some in New York. So very local to you, accessible. And it's away from just pure bonuses. So from a product perspective, whilst, we do have an offering that's very comparable, similar to what others have, we all do in the market. It's kind of the sprinkle around that in terms of what makes our offering and proposal and our journeys unique, really engaging. We focus heavily on customer experience. So whether you come in and, you're a lower value player, but actually you'll fall into a dedicated loyalty scheme. You kind of track where you are. You can get rewards and vouchers that you can go and spend on food and beverage or entertainment or whatever. And then on top of that, all the way through, we've got these great headline promotions that are gamified where you get free spins and bonuses. So there's a huge amount there aside from just the usual kind of go in and playing slot roulette. And I think with that, it just helps us set ourselves aside from the rest of the market in terms of we do offer something a little bit different, not only with pure casino, but we also have all this great stuff that you can take part in and redeem as a player.
Nice. And for those of you who do not know what IHOP is, it's International House of Pancakes. And I've always wondered, John, when are we going to see IHOP over here on this side of the pond? It's amazing. 50 or 60 different types of pancakes stacks you can have. No, joking aside, yeah. the loyalty side, the VIP side of the US also differs quite a bit from Europe, from what I can gather, yeah. No? Or as in it's so ingrained in the brick and mortar experience, and like you're saying, people really take their points and their loyalty programs really seriously. It's really a big factor in deciding, am I going to stay at hotel A or hotel B or online services A or B. Is that your experience as well?
You're right. It's absolutely huge out there. Literally every time I'm over there, whether I'm in a restaurant or whatever, going through the airport, everything that I get offered is like, are you a member? Have you got your loyalty card? Have you got this? So it's absolutely ingrained in society and what they do. So they expect it elsewhere. Why wouldn't they? And it's to be expected in their online casino experience. And that's what we look to offer. From a VIP perspective, it's a huge VIP market. It's a bit of a different beast there. Look, don't get me wrong, UK market is still very VIP heavy. We touched on affordability and how that's kind of had an impact there. And in terms of the VIP setup and the size of VIP, so it's moved on from there a little bit in other markets. But in the US, it's still huge. And it's how can we treat, as a challenger brand, how could we treat a VIP differently? Could we be a bit more agile than some of the bigger players with maybe some of the players that wouldn't be a VIP, wouldn't be categorized as a VIP in some of the bigger brands? But for us, they are, we're a startup. So we look to identify players early, as fast as we can, get them through into VIP status. They then get their one-to-one account management. We are just on the cusp of getting a hospitality suite at MetLife as well for the New York Giants. So, that's going to help us kind of entertain and give us an asset as well that we can sell into our VIP players, as well as all the concerts and stuff that go on there. So that's very exciting as well. We look to kind of offer something that the competitors can't, for the fact that, we can be just a little bit faster, a little bit more agile with some of the lower value players that have been missed off. But yeah, huge VIP market. Loyalty is front of mind with everything. And that's why we try to replicate that by giving them something that they can kind of, you know, get progress on with different stamps and different missions and kind of gamified, so that then they can go and redeem, yeah, at places like IHOP. There's somewhere I certainly don't need to go now with Christmas on the horizon, but it is very good.
Exactly, exactly. Very good. So am I sensing a PlayStar private jet for the VIP experience being on the 2024 budget, John?
Yeah, not quite there yet. That might be a bit of a challenge to get through, actually. Well, yeah, we're expanding a little bit on brand. That might be a little bit too rich for our blood, yeah.
Nice, fair enough. All right, very good. Cool. Anything else to mention around marketing or product, John? Anything you wanna highlight or tips and tricks for anyone else?
Yeah, not really. I think one of the things we're focusing heavily on that has worked well in other markets and that I've seen work extremely well in this space is personalization. You talk about loyalty being something that that people are used to in the US. I think everyone everywhere is now so used to personalization and the Netflix of things and, you know, everything that you interact with, sort of getting to know you better and you don't have the same experience every time. It's funny, we've been speaking about personalization for years, like a very, very long time in this sector. And a few have kind of nailed it to an extent, but I don't think it's ever become, like, you know, front and center with a certain brand offering a fully fledged, like, you know, personalized experience, whether you're a slots player, if there's another person who's playing, you know, a slots player, but their value slightly different and their gameplay slightly different, that they then suddenly get a truly different experience based on their own gameplay using, you know, modeling, AI, that kind of thing, I think is really going to be something for the future that will come out, because ultimately, look, they have that level of interaction across everything else, whether it's, you know, doing their online weekly food shop or sitting down to watch Netflix or their satellite TV, all of that sort of stuff. So that is something that we're exploring a lot. You know, we've got some lofty ambitions there. We'd love to be, you know, really the truly most personalized online casino in the US. And that for us is an ambition that we have set out, something that a goal that we've set ourselves. So we're looking into that and looking into how we can use, you know, predictive modeling, BI, to really be the driving force behind that through the different levels. Because at the moment, they're getting great stuff based on the level that you're in, the progress bars, all that, delivered a huge amount in the past, you know, 17 months or so. But yeah, that for me is something that we'll be heavily focused on. And I think something that I think will be, you know, rife in the market. I watch a lot of the content that you guys do. It's great. And that's always, it's mentioned recently. I was watching one earlier and they were talking around personalization and how, you know, using third parties to support that, whereas people were trying to build proprietary and do things in-house. But no, I think that's going to be it's pretty untapped at the moment. I think that's something that's going to be a huge focus, especially as a lot of the bigger brands, as I say, over the past couple of years have kind of changed the way that they're marketing, changed the way that they focus on kind of growth and EBITDA and you know, profitability being such now front and center from a online gambling perspective, especially in the US. So yeah, I think that will only help. But yeah, I think that's the only other thing to touch on. And I think we're in a good place to do it, especially as the brand. You know, we have this concierge. He should be your guy. You know, he's the guy who comes in and tells you, hey, this is how you play, whether you're a newbie or you're a VIP and you're coming over and trying this for the first time or you're coming back. So yeah, that's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. I'm, you know, personalization was such a buzzword again. Like if we go back, whatever, it feels like 5 or 7 years, but I could be wrong over here in Europe at least. But
no, you're right.
Everyone was talking personalization. Then I think it kind of died in, you know, technical debt, too complicated to actually execute it. And, you know, people were, it just sort of remained a buzzword. But now I'm feeling there was very few that sort of managed to do anything about it. And now I'm sensing sort of a resurgence, a bit of personalization over here as well. I think there's some new tools on the market that can actually, you know, it's not only the CRM side, it's also the actual shop front. When you go into my site, I can actually customize, you know, completely the lobby. I will know if you're a table game player or a slot player. If you're, you know, like high volatile or low volatile, and I can completely customize that to you. So I'm sensing more and more people talking about it again. So it feels like there's some new tools on the market that can actually make it happen this time. And I think, John, you guys, obviously being a relatively new brand, I would expect not so much technical debt to have to plow through in order to do any changes, right? So you're probably really well positioned for that, would be my guess.
Yeah, I think so. And I think the other thing as well that we can leverage is the expertise in the business. They've delivered this on other brands, albeit mainly UK and focused in the EU. So it's applying that. But a lot of the stuff that we've applied have been, you know, from those markets that have worked extremely well, and they translate very well as well, which is why, you know, when you say at the top, the difference is there. Actually, the players are the same. They want to get to their content as fast as possible, and they want to have a great time doing so. So, you know, when we apply some of these, you know, engagement pieces, gamification, and looking at how we can make it more personalized for them so that it's familiar and they can get to their content faster, and the recommended content, you know, isn't just, oh, there's a slots player, let's just put a new slot game on there. It's actually relevant recommended content for them to go and try out. I think is going to be for us, I would agree we can probably get there a little bit faster, but as you say, it certainly is coming back. It was as long as 7 years ago. I do remember it then. I think it was probably even a little bit longer that people were talking about personalizations. It was like this brand new thing, and, you know, this is going to change the game. And frankly, I still think it is that. I think it's I think it'd be amazing when you know, brands get it right. And I've seen it to an extent when brands are applying a lot of these personalization features and you know, really robust ABC testing to see what's working, and I think we'll be in a good position to activate some of that. And I think it sits extremely well with the brand, as you know, when you first come to the website, you hit our fly through and it takes you through this kind of virtual casino in New Jersey, so it should feel like, you know, a real experience for you with the concierge, you know, our lead character kind of taking you all the way through that process. So I think if we can make that even more personalized, then that's great. But yeah, it's certainly coming back with a force, and I think there's going to be a lot of people doing it as well.
Nice. All right. John, I wanted to touch as well briefly on sort of organization and teams. From what I understand, for Playstar, it's a sort of a location-wise hybrid sort of model in terms of some of you guys in New Jersey, some of them, you know, elsewhere around the world or in the UK as well. Yeah. So there's time zones. There's all these kind of things to consider. And also, at least my read on the US market, obviously the online bit is relatively new, right? So I would imagine the fight for talent must be fierce. So are you managing to recruit sort of local online talent? Do you rely on you know, European or importing talent, or talk us through sort of the whole thinking around getting a US casino off the ground from a team perspective?
Yeah, so we have, in terms of local on the ground members of the team, we have the usual kind of customer service, VIP, fraud and payments, all the things that you kind of need to have as a nucleus in New Jersey. And those guys are amazing. We've managed to get some really, really strong people out there. And that's headed up by our COO, Dan Alexander, who's out there. So he's in New Jersey, and they're kind of from the day-to-day operations perspective. But then a lot of his team as well are kind of around Europe. We have some in Bulgaria, some in Gibraltar, some in Spain. And me, myself, my team is based predominantly in the EU. A lot of people in Gib, a lot of people in Spain, but then I also do have boots on the ground in the US as well. So both from an acquisition side and a CRM side. And again, we've been really fortunate. We've managed to recruit some amazing people, some of which are brand new to the industry as well. And, you know, they've just had an amazing attitude and come in and learned so fast, hit the ground running and do an amazing job out there. I think, you know, for us, in terms of recruiting talent, there is some great talent in the US for sure. But at the same time, it's been easier for us to kind of, with our network, and, you know, between myself and the team, there's decades of experience in there. You know, the team really is sort of a real first-class operation from a marketing perspective all the way through products and ops. And we've just been fortunate that we've managed to kind of build the team from the ground up and get some really good people here. There were some great people in here as well before I joined that I, you know, I was fortunate enough to work with previously, which is why I was, you know, a lot of the signs were there in terms of, I think Playstar would be a great project even 2 years ago when I was having conversations about joining. So I think the way that it works really well for us in terms of having that EU and that US split is it's kind of always on, because when we're checking the numbers and kind of, you know, jumping onto first meetings in the morning, you're talking kind of 4 a.m. In the US, 3 a.m. really for CET time for the guys in Europe. So then we can get everything done from kind of a bonusing, understanding what's going on, acquisition full rundown. And then we hand the baton over to the guys in New Jersey in the afternoon. And then we're on contact through the night. So, you know, that's been extremely helpful. It's also helped us kind of build a team of experts that we know and trust to kind of take on some of the bigger roles around the marketing side, the ops side. And as I say, the team in New Jersey is fantastic. You know, we are now in a process of, I'm looking to get more boots on the ground in New Jersey, kind of new hires, looking to get them there in real time. It's just so helpful. It saves a lot of us being up till quite late at night to see what's going on and stuff when there's ever problems that arise, which is, you know, few and far between, fortunately. But yeah, it works extremely well. As I say, we've got a really good team. I think it's been vital, actually, that there's been a lot of previous relationships there and people knowing each other. People have slotted in extremely well. We've been really fortunate on that front, actually. The stars have aligned on a lot of those. But at the same time, the people that we've managed to recruit in the US as well are first class. So it's been great. And it works well. You know, it does work well. And I can totally understand why people have more of a US hub. And don't get me wrong, we do have a huge presence there with a lot of people out in our New Jersey office. But at the same time, having people in the EU as well just kind of has that kind of always on view, you know, and with the time difference, we kind of pick things up very, very early and then everyone kind of takes over to go into the evening. So, yeah, and with the time difference, not too bad, you know, sort of 11 p.m., sort of 6 p.m. there, my time, I'm based in, like, we're just outside London. So, yeah, you kind of get the full view of the day, which is, it helps being up early in up early Eastern time, which is good.
Nice. So you don't have the Skype pinging away 24/7 in your bedroom.
Sometimes I won't lie to you. Sometimes we do, but it's all right. We work through it, and we, as I say, we've got some great people out there who can manage stuff. But yeah, I won't lie. It does happen sometimes, but we make it work.
Yeah, I can imagine. Good, good, very good. John, at the end of every podcast, I tend to ask for a few predictions, and I appreciate that we have not prepared this, so feel free to opt out, to use a marketing phrase. If you should give your best guess on the U.S. Online casino market, let's say 2 or 3 years into the future, any predictions you want to make versus how the situation is today? Can be anything, marketing-wise, overall, market-wise, anything.
For sure. So no, I won't opt out on you. I'll accept the question. So for me, I think more states will open up. There will be more states regulated. So I do think that will be the case. We've been waiting for some time for a few of those states to open up, many of which, you know, we're kind of ready from a market access perspective. And I do feel that will happen sooner rather than later, and more will be passed. I think from a marketing channel perspective, I think it's kind of happening now, but I think it will be probably even more prevalent in the next 2 to 3 years is that kind of shift away from the spray and pray approach. That phrase was, I remember coming to what was then iGaming Next a couple of years ago, and that was kind of the big buzz phrase, and it was, and people's minds were changing slightly around it, in that, you know, actually we need to make sure that spend is efficient and that we're understanding what everything is doing in terms of that whole mixed model and, you know, connected attribution, all this sort of stuff. And I do feel that will be even more relevant in a couple of years, but I do think that a lot of brands are at the start of that process and have been probably for about the past year or so. So yeah, I think there'll be probably more of a shift there in terms of the above the line and that kind of brand led approach to be more performance led, but actually doing brand in a more effective way. Yeah, those would be my two big call outs. I think that I've covered personalization. I do think that's, as we both agreed, it's becoming more of a buzzword. More and more people are focusing on personalization tools and what they can do in terms of making the online gambling experience, sports and casino, more personalized to them. So yeah, those would be my main takes.
Nice. Very good. John, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on and learning more about PlayStar, yourself and the US market. So really appreciate your time. Any closing remarks from your side?
No, not really. Look, it's been great chatting through and really enjoyed the conversation. So look, thank you very much for having me on.
My pleasure, John. Great. Perfect. Have a fantastic day and we'll keep in touch.
Cheers, Michael. Speak soon.
Cheers.